With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Welcome to the 340th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Patrick Winograd. In this probably brief edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and a recap of the past week in college basketball. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, starting and ending in college basketball, where I went 2-2. That brings me to 1490 and 937 overall, a 61.4% winning percentage. Obviously, it was NBA All-Star Weekend. All the formats of those events were a little strange and hard to, you know, hard to come up with a regular prediction for them. So I just left them alone for 1 week. You know, 1 week isn't going to hurt anybody. But in the NCAA, Wisconsin beat number 10 Michigan State 92-71. I got that one wrong. It's kind of funny because both the games I got wrong will spoil the next one. It was number 13 Purdue beating Iowa 78-57. My thought process on those two games was that one of the two road favorites was going to win. I just didn't know which one. And, you know, I guess you could say the safe thing to do would be to just pick both road favorites or pick both home teams and just see which one is right. But I'm not of the opinion of, like, I want to even out my record at, you know, 3-1 or whatever every week. I don't feel like that's a genuine way to do it. So I'd rather just make the pick and be wrong if I'm wrong. And I was right in the mentality of one of them was going to win and one of them was going to lose. I was just wrong about which was which. Of course, Wisconsin is the one, the home favorite, or the home underdog that ended up winning, whereas Iowa was the home underdog that lost, and I picked that the opposite. But moving on from that, number 5 Iowa State beat number 9 Kansas 74-56, which was a win, and then number 15 Virginia beat Ohio State 70-66 in a win for me as well. So pretty good results for me. I would say I'm pretty happy with that. And overall, I mean, you know, 2-2 is 2-2. I had the mentality right, and I swung for the fences. You know, had I picked the right game the right way, it would have been 4-0. And had I just been, you know, safe with the pick, it would have been 3-1. So, yeah, I ended up with the worst possible outcome of the three possible based on what my other picks were. But you know what? It's okay. You live and you learn. But we'll move on from weekend predictions to a quick recap of, I guess, really the first half of the NBA season. Now that we've hit the All-Star break, it's the same team atop the East, also the same team atop the West, but we'll get to that in a second. But it's the Pistons who are leading the East. They are 40-13 on the season, 8-2 in their last 10. They go into the break on a 3-game winning streak. Obviously, talking about the Pistons season, you know, this is, I mean, it's not coming out of nowhere. We knew that this team, based on what they did last year, was going to be a pretty competitive team in a wide open East, but I think a lot of people still thought that kind of the old guard team, so to speak, were still going to dominate the standings, especially in the regular season, even if, you know, something else happened in the postseason. Who really, I mean, I don't think anybody really knew for sure what would happen, but I think a lot of people kind of, you know, expected the teams like the Knicks and the Cavs and the Celtics, even without Jason Tatum, maybe not as much as Celtics, but, you know, those kinds of teams to, you know, make their way up the standings. And, you know, teams like the Pistons, you know, the Hawks, the Magic, those guys who had kind of, you know, they younger teams, newer teams, you know, or not newer teams, but younger teams with kind of new builds or splashy offseason trades and signings that they made. They thought that those teams would make the leaps necessary to kind of potentially contend at the top of the East. But I didn't think that the Pistons would end up first. And I mean, first team to 40 wins in the East is no small feat. I mean, that's a big achievement for such a young team because they still have a lot of room to grow in the future. And then there are those old guard teams that I was talking about. You have the Celtics in second. Of course, I guess that would be a surprise given the Jason Tatum injury. Obviously, that is not something that people really expected. With him being out for so long, I don't think people thought they'd be all the way at the top of the East, only trailing the Pistons. And ahead only by a half a game, but still ahead of the Knicks, who are 35-20. They're having pretty much the exact season I think people thought they would. Although, I guess you could say they probably should be a few games better and leading the East, but that's being a little too nitpicky. At least in my opinion, they're 8-2 heading into the All-Star break. Dealt with some injury issues early on, but they've been better recently, obviously, as that record indicates. Then you have the Cavaliers. They're sitting in the fourth seed at 34-21, just a game back of the Knicks. They've had their fair share of ups and downs, but they really come into the break on a good stretch. Obviously, the splashy trade of getting James Harden is, I mean, it's a huge deal. It's not something that I think a lot of people expected the Cavs to do, go out and get Harden and let go of Darius Garland in that trade. But they've won five in a row. They're 9-1 their last 10. So we'll see if that holds and also continues into the postseason. But so far, so good for the outcome of that trade. Then you have the Raptors. They're in fifth at 32-23. I would say one of the more surprising teams of the East as well, but arguably the most surprising team out of the six that are in playoff position, excluding the play-in teams. I think probably the most surprising that's included in this top six. A roster of guys that, really, I mean, a lot of people made fun of them because they built a roster off of pretty much only second and third options in their careers, and not necessarily on winning teams for all those guys either. So it's a very interesting roster, and it's worked though. The pieces have fit together well. And just great coaching job being done there to lead the Raptors to where they are. Then you have the Sixers. They are in sixth in the East. Obviously, again, injuries, if you want to talk about those, and suspensions with Paul George. I mean, there's a lot of different routes that you could talk about the availability aspect for the Sixers through, but the reality is they're still in the playoff race right now. And they're 30-24, which is pretty solid on the year, all things considered. Then in the play-in, you have the Magic. They're 28-25. The Heat, who are 29-27, and then the team I want to talk about a little bit more, the Hornets. They are 26-29, but they've won 9 of their last 10. And obviously, this is a pretty good team. I mean, this is a team that, probably isn't going to make too much noise in the playoffs due to just kind of the inexperience. I don't think a lot of people are expecting too much of them once they actually make it there. But I think a lot of people at this point in what the East looks like are expecting this team to keep their surge up, and for them to actually make it into the playoffs in the first place, which is a big achievement, considering how young this team is. Although you could have said that about that team for years now, so I guess maybe it diminishes that achievement to some extent that they have been young for a while. They just haven't done much with that young talent, and obviously Charlotte, not a place that's gonna attract many stars, as rough it as it is. That's just kind of true. But overall, interesting picture going on there. In the rest of the East, you have the Hawks, of course, traded away Trae Young, traded away Kristaps Porzingis, but Jalen Johnson has been amazing. He's an all-star this year. And this team is still looking decent without the guy who was their franchise player for so long, which is always, I mean, it's a sudden diversion from the trajectory that the organization was on, but the reality is the team might be better for it, especially long term. But then you have the teams that are on the outside looking in. You have the Bulls and the Bucks tied a game and a half behind the Hawks. They are 24-31 and 23-30, respectively. Biggest news out of either of these teams is the Bulls really not picking a lane between, I mean, I don't really think you can say they've tanked fully. Maybe you can make that argument. I don't really think so, but they also definitely are not in contention either. And then meanwhile, the Bucks, of course, didn't trade Giannis, which was one of the biggest stories of the trade deadline, was where was he going to go? And it ended up being nowhere. It's just staying put. The Bulls, by the way, speaking of maybe they are tanking, 1-9 in their last 10. They've lost 6 in a row, so hovering around tanking territory, but not bad enough to be down there with the likes of the Nets, the Pacers, and the Wizards, who are all going to get about 30 seconds combined. They're 15-38, 15-40, and 14-39. Just pretty disastrous seasons for the teams at the bottom of the East, although the Pacers obviously have the big excuse of not having Tyrese Halliburton, so that makes a little more sense. Meanwhile, the Wizards, despite being the worst team in the East, have traded for Anthony Davis and Trae Young. So that's a little bit curious. But now we can move on to the West. Of course, it's the Oklahoma City Thunder at the top of the West. They are 42-14, best record overall in the entire NBA, although they're just 5-5 in their last 10, which has allowed the San Antonio Spurs, who now have the third best record overall in the league, to pretty much catch up to the Thunder. They have won six in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. And they're now closer to the Thunder than the Nuggets are to the Spurs, which, going back to that now, the Nuggets are in third. They are 3.5 games behind the Spurs, 6.5 behind the Thunder, 5-5 in their last 10. But again, the Spurs, just a great season. You know, they've missed Wemby for a few games. They've had him for most. They've been good, frankly, regardless of who's been in the game for them. They're just an amazing, well-put-together team. And they've even been good when Wemby's come off the bench, not necessarily as a starter carrying the entire load. So pretty interesting makeup of a team that the Spurs have. They are just really, really solid overall, though, and I think that's kind of the big key there for the Spurs. But then right behind them, you have the Nuggets, as I said. Obviously, Jokic has missed some games. But Jamal Murray has had kind of his, I mean, I guess the best season he's had, pretty easily the best season he's had. It's the only year he's been an all-star, mostly just because of health, right? I mean, this is the first year that he's been fully healthy for an entire first half, and now he is here. He's here in the all-star game. The Nuggets are still here in third. And it's a good sign for them going forward. Obviously, Jokic might not be able to win the MVP because of how many games he's missed, but if you're talking about a team perspective, the Nuggets still doing as great as they've been for really the last few years. But then behind the Nuggets, you have the Rockets in fourth. They're one game behind the Nuggets. The Lakers are a game are a half of a game, excuse me, behind the Rockets. And the Timberwolves are also tied with the Lakers. The Lakers at 33-21. The Timberwolves at 34-22. Of course, the Lakers have their two stars. We know what that team is made up of and who's going to carry the load for them in terms of the whole season. But the reality is, do we know if this team's going to compete in the playoffs, or is it going to be a repeat of last year? Who knows? I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that they have the better chemistry this year and also just a better roster overall. But they've still been figuring out kind of the auxiliary pieces of that roster throughout the season. So it's definitely a debate that you can have back and forth. But the Timberwolves, meanwhile, pretty much doing exactly what they did last year. They look incredibly dangerous. The interesting thing for them is that they've been pretty good against Oklahoma City this year, which is obviously going to be a huge deal come playoff time, because you're going to have to beat the best to advance. And obviously, as opposed to, no offense, but a team like the Lakers, who haven't looked good against teams like the Thunder, the top of the league in general, it is good to have what the Timberwolves have, that even though, you know, their overall record isn't necessarily anything special, they've been really good against the top of the league. So interesting storylines to track there. But then beyond that, in the play-in bracket, you have the Suns. They are a game and a half behind the Timberwolves. Really feel like the only team in the play-in bracket that could actually replace one of the Wolves, the Lakers, the Rockets, or maybe the Nuggets, I guess. But they've been solid this season. I think, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but also based on the season they had last year, not necessarily expected to be so high up in the playoff picture. I think a play-in bracket team, it's not surprising that they're there, but the fact that they're on top of it, and closer to the real playoff teams than the other play-in teams, is pretty shocking to me. Then you have the Warriors. They're 29-26. The Blazers, who are 27-29. The Clippers, who were 26-28, thanks to that kind of middle of the season surge that James Harden had powered them to before they traded him. Kind of interesting, because I don't know what's exactly going to happen with this team post All-Star break, if they will kind of revert to what they were at the beginning of the season now that there's no Harden. Who knows? But interesting things to talk about. But regardless, they're in 10th. They're still in play in bracket position. 2.5 back of the Warriors, or both of those teams. Meanwhile, the Warriors, 3 games back of the Suns. And then every team really is out of reach from there. I mean, these teams at the bottom of the West are pretty bad. The Grizzlies at 20-33, they are 5.5 games behind the Clippers and the Blazers. Then you have the Mavericks, who are a game and a half behind that at 19-35. The Jazz, who are 2 games behind that at 18-38. The Pelicans at 15-41 are 3 games behind those teams. And the Sacramento Kings at 12-44 have lost 14 in a row and have the worst record in the entire NBA. So interesting things going on, obviously, up and down the league. I think it's been a really interesting first half. I've really loved NBC's entry back into the fold. I can't say I really consciously remember any NBC broadcast of the NBA, but obviously that theme song became the college basketball theme song for Fox games. So very fond of the music, very fond of the soundtrack, and very fond of their commentary team. I think really overall the league has done a great job this year on its national TV slate, and really just everything having to do that, or having to do with that, excuse me. And in general, very much have enjoyed this season. I think we're in for a very, very good postseason as long as OKC doesn't dominate like they did last year. I think most people will be happy with the outcome. But finally, we can move on and talk about the last week in college basketball, starting with number 13 Purdue, who beat number 7 Nebraska 80-77 in overtime. That was a very big win for the Boilermakers to get on the board. Obviously, they've had some struggles with some of the better teams, and they had that big, not necessarily losing streak, but a big span where they were kind of alternating wins and losses. But they have rebounded from that pretty quickly. They are now up to the top 10 pretty easily. They're in the top 7, I believe. And they're taking on Michigan tonight. So they have an opportunity to grow and go even farther and surge even higher up in those polls. But for now, they're at 7. We'll see what they do against Michigan. Very, very big game at Mackey coming up. Really a game that Michigan can kind of seal the Big Ten title away in. Not necessarily clinch it outright, obviously, but one that feels like it would do pretty much everything that you can besides actually putting it away, to put it away. But moving on to a different conference, in the ACC, Miami beat number 11 North Carolina 75-66, a very, very close game. The biggest storyline in this game, though, actually turned out to be from the post game. It was Caleb William, or Caleb, excuse me, Caleb Wilson. It's not football season. We're done with that. Caleb Wilson's injury to his hand that at least has him out for a few weeks for the foreseeable future. I think the terminology specifically that was used was indefinite. Not sure if he'll be back for the tournament. Not sure if he'll be back for the ACC tournament. We will just have to see. But for now, he will not be playing. And that has a big impact on North Carolina. And we'll just have to figure out how big that impact is throughout the rest of the season. But then you have number 15, Virginia. They barely beat Florida State 61-58, a close game, but still a win for them. You have number 19, Vanderbilt, who beat Auburn 84-76. Number 22, BYU, who beat Baylor 99-94. This win had extra importance later in the week, and I'll talk about why in a second. But Wisconsin beat number 8, Illinois 92-90 in overtime. Wisconsin, they have a knack for beating the top teams in the Big Ten, as we've now seen. They have 3 top 10 wins this season, and I'll get to the third in a second. This was just the second one of the year. Just cashing in threes, though. I think they hit 16 in this game. Well, 16 in this game. It was 16 and 15 in the two games last week. I'm not quite sure which one they hit 16 and which one they hit 15 in, but similar concept. Either way. Then you have number. Then you have TCU, excuse me, who beat number 5, Iowa State, 62-55. A big upset over the Cyclones, but they had more to say about that later in the week. Then you had number 21, Arkansas, who beat LSU 91-62, a dominant win by the Razorbacks, who continue to be an upper echelon team in the SEC that teams don't, or that people don't really talk about as being on that level. But the fact of the matter is, they're right on that level. They're probably not at Florida's level, don't get me wrong. But I think beyond Florida and the way they've been playing in recent weeks, it's hard to argue anybody over Arkansas. I mean, yes, you have Kentucky. Yes, you could say Tennessee. Georgia's had their moments at some points in the season. Vanderbilt obviously had a great start, but until Vanderbilt's fully healthy, I think for now, and then also Texas A&M has been good too, but I think for now you could put Arkansas in that second spot, and really, you could argue that pretty solidly. But moving on from that, Maryland beat Iowa 77-70, a shocking upset, as Iowa had been pretty clean and pretty good at taking care of business against the bottom teams in the Big Ten. But that did not happen in that game. Of course, Iowa coming up, or yeah, ending up with the upset loss, Maryland taking that victory. Then you have Ohio State. They beat USC 89-82. A big win for the Buckeyes just to beat another fellow bubble team. That's very, very important to do when you're on the bubble, although they need to get some more higher quality wins on their own later in the season. We'll see if they can do that or not. Number 14, Florida beat Georgia 86-66. Again, Florida just continuing to assert their dominance over the rest of that conference. Virginia Tech beat number 20, Clemson 76-66. Bit of a shocking game there. Virginia Tech, they're a bubble team and they've kind of needed wins like that, but they really didn't show, it didn't seem like they were going to get wins like that. So I guess kind of shocking that they did get that win And instead, now Clemson is the one who drops unexpectedly. Then you have number six, UConn, won another close one this time against Butler, 80 to 70. Number 16, Texas Tech, as a precursor to what they did later in the week, arguably just as impressive. They beat Colorado 78 to 44. So just an absolute beatdown by the Red Raiders in that game. New Mexico got a quad one win, very important for their bubble hopes, by beating Grand Canyon 70 to 64. Penn State beat Washington 63 to 60. That kind of sinks their bubble hopes. Wisconsin's second upset of the week was beating number 10 Michigan State 92 to 71. And then going to the undefeateds, you had number 23 Miami of Ohio beating Ohio 90 to 74. And I shouldn't say undefeateds because there is only one. The next best thing, I guess, at this point is no number two Michigan, who, of course, is now number one heading into this week, but of course also plays two top 10 games, neither of which are at home. So could be a very short-lived run at number one for Michigan. There's also a chance that Michigan could lose a game and still be number one at the end of the week, depending on which game they lose and by how much, which is a very, very interesting thing to think about. But Michigan beat UCLA by 30 nonetheless. Number seven, Nebraska beat Northwestern 68 to 49 over the weekend, bouncing back from that loss to Purdue at home. Then you have number four Duke, who beat number 20 Clemson 67 to 54. So a rough week for the Tigers. TCU followed up that big win against Iowa State with a big road win against Oklahoma State 95 to 92 in overtime. So two quad one wins for the Horned Frogs over the weekend. That is, if Oklahoma State stays in the top 75 in the net, which I think they should, but they've been kind of underrated by the net all year, so it's wouldn't shock me if they also fall just on the wrong end of that, but still a pretty good win on the road regardless. Then you have number five Iowa State. They beat number nine Kansas 76 to 54, bouncing back from that loss earlier in the week to TCU, and they needed that one desperately to give them some momentum going into a big week that they have this week, and we'll get to the first game of that week later. But then moving on with some of the interesting things that happened later Saturday, that, some of these are game related and some of these are not game related. Number 17, St. John's beat Providence 79 to 69. But the story of that game was a six ejection causing fight between these two teams. And then one later ejection on the Providence side. I think Jameer Jones got ejected for a hard foul later in the game. So just a shocking result, honestly. I mean, I didn't. Obviously, that game was going to be intense based on, the backstory between St. John's and Providence, but I don't think anybody expected it to be quite that intense or fight causing. But here we are. St. John's, though, escapes with the victory. Very important for their Big East title hopes. I don't think UConn's going to drop another game to anybody else but St. John's or Villanova potentially. So no room for error in the other games there. But then you've number 19 Vanderbilt. They beat A&M 82 to 69. Again, A&M, one of those decent teams elsewhere in the SEC, but it has struggled when playing the top teams in that conference. Syracuse beat SMU 79 to 78. Important game because it puts SMU pretty much squarely on the bubble, if not at least somewhere close to it, after they had been safe-ish for most of the season. Florida State beat Virginia Tech 92 to 69, so Virginia Tech kind of undid their own progress from earlier in the week, getting that win earlier. The big one over Clemson. This loss to Florida State by a big margin just kind of undoes all and undid all of that work, the positive work that they had from earlier in the week. Then you have number 14 Florida. They beat number 25 Kentucky 92 to 83. Again, Florida doing Florida things in that conference, a much weaker SEC than it was last year. Number 22 BYU beat Colorado 90 to 86 in overtime. And the reason why I said that BYU's win over Baylor was so important is because Richie Saunders unfortunately tore his ACL in this game for BYU, which makes them a significantly less formidable team. No offense to the rest of that roster, but other than Rob Wright and AJ Devonta, there's nothing going on that's really of note on the offensive end for that team. And it just feels like the Cougars probably won't be able to compete at a super high level without Saunders. They kind of needed that score, that third scoring option. That scoring trio was lethal, but when you make it a duo, it's a lot harder, or it's a lot easier, excuse me, to shut them down. And I guess on their end, it's a lot harder for them to generate offense. So very, very big deal there. And obviously BYU getting that road victory over Baylor was pretty important because I'm not sure how many quad one wins they're going to claim in the rest of the season. Then you have number 24, Louisville, who beat Baylor 82 to 71. Again, rare non-con action late in February, but we're getting a few of those. Obviously, Michigan Duke this week is going to be the biggest story of all of those. You also have Miami, who beat NC State 77 to 76. Two teams that are not in the top 25, but are pretty close to it. I mean, it feels like a 35 versus 40th best team in the country type of game, which both of those are tournament teams, so it's worth noting. But Miami with the big road win there very much helps their resume, pushes them almost to lock status, probably above a 90% chance to make the tournament at this point. As we talked about in predictions, number 13, Purdue beat Iowa 78 to 57. Number 16, Texas Tech, they obviously their win earlier in the week over Colorado was dominant by margin, but this one they probably played a better game. 78 to 75, they beat Arizona on the road in overtime. So, arguably one of the best wins of the season. I think, given who the team is, I think we know that Texas Tech has what it takes to take down these top teams. So, arguably a little bit worse than some other wins, some bigger upsets that have happened over the course of the season. But the reality is they did beat the number one team. And obviously, that is a massive, massive deal. But Texas Tech also has a win over Duke, also has a win over Houston. So they have not been shy in terms of beating the juggernauts this season. And this game was no different, even though Coa Pete was out for most of the second half. Then you have number 15, Virginia, as we talked about in predictions, beat Ohio State. Number 21, Arkansas beat Auburn 88 to 75. Big win for the Razorbacks. Then you have Texas, who beat Missouri 85 to 68 on the road. Texas desperately, desperately, desperately needed a quad one road victory. So this one was a big one for them. Number 12, Gonzaga beat Santa Clara 94 to 86. Keep adapting to life without Braden Huff. This time did so successfully. So a big win for the Zags there in that game. Then you have number 8, Illinois, who beat Indiana 71 to 51. The Illini bouncing back from their loss earlier in the week to Wisconsin at home and coming up with a big victory at home. And then in some American action, USF beat FAU 83 to 81 in overtime. That was arguably the most important game of the weekend in that conference because, of course, USF is currently leading that conference. And then finally, we get to the clash of last night. Number 6, Iowa State beat number 2, Houston 70 to 67. Just another physical, tough game between both of those teams. Very, very important for the Big 12 title race. If Iowa State can potentially pull off another upset later in the season, they might have a chance of winning it. Obviously, Houston, with their two losses, is barely ahead of Arizona, who now has, or I guess tied with Arizona, who has two losses. And those two teams will play each other on Saturday. So big, big, big title implications of the Big 12. But for now, that's all we have for the week. That wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, February 24th, where we will once again talk about my weekend predictions and have our weekly review of the NBA and college basketball. In the meantime, be sure to check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursday, and my College Hoops Bracketology, which comes out every Monday. All of that on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.